May 11th, 2020 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for being with us this morning. In the spirit of social distancing due to the COVID-19 virus, today's meeting will be conducted by telephone. Members of the public that might be on the phone are encouraged to make comments and ask questions. If you do wish to speak, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. I will open the phone lines near the end of our morning session for such comments. This morning's meeting is both a study session, and then this afternoon we'll have a business session, which will start at 1 o'clock. Today we have all five commissioners on the phone. General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfin, Clerk of the Board, are in the boardroom. At this time, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America,
and to the Republic which stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. At this time, we want to talk about the consent agenda. Any item on the consent agenda is subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear such request?
Commissioner Arsenault.
Yes.
Commissioner Smith here. Based on recommendation of management, I'd like to suggest we move resolutions 9, 10, 11, 13, and 14 to the consent agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Do I hear a second?
Second, by Ann.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 I think the ayes have it.
Aye.
Thank you. Steve, at this time we're ready to move on to the agenda.
Okay, Commissioners, I'd like to do one thing. With respect to the agenda, agenda item 5, the Integrated Resource Plan, Load and Resource Forecast, is not a public hearing, but by state law it is required that we advertise that that subject will be on the agenda. So just would like to check to see if there's any member of the public that is on this call and that might want to comment. If so, then we would move that up to the first agenda item. So if I could just open the question, is there anybody here that would like to comment on this item? Okay, hearing none, we're going to stick with the agenda as it was printed then, and we will start with the quarterly energy resources update. Greg Carrington and Janet Jaspers will be presenting.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources, and today Janet and I, and Janet will introduce herself a little bit later on in the presentation, will provide you an overview of the Energy Resources Q1 2020 update. And as I walk through the presentation, I'll let you know what slide number I'm on so that you can follow. So I'm moving on to slide number 2. It's a review of the agenda. I will be reviewing a portfolio to begin with. Janet will talk about operations and planning and give you a brief market update as well. Some of the key points, slide number 3, that you'll be seeing today, and Janet will talk about this in more detail, is our net wholesale revenue forecast and other energy-related revenues are down by $2.4 million. That Janet will explain in more detail, but primarily caused by a drop in the forward price curves. We were going long into the year, and then also there's been some offsetting amounts associated with generation inflows, and she'll give you the details associated with those. Moving on to slide number 4, some of the major activities that are going on in the Western power market. Believe it or not, none of the meetings have slowed down. They continue to be at the same pace that they were prior to the COVID-19. The only thing that has changed is that we're not meeting face-to-face. Resource adequacy is moving forward through the Northwest Power Pool. We are developing a program. We're expected to go into the next phase of the resource adequacy program, which is the final design beginning in June of this year. Short-term power markets. The main issue that we're following there is the potential of the EIM energy imbalance market moving on to a day-ahead market. They're still moving forward from a CAISO perspective, taking a look at what is called the extended day-ahead market in California. All of those meetings are still occurring, and that is making progress as well. State carbon policies, the Energy Transformation Act, referred to often as CETA. We received the first draft of the rules associated with that policy. We are reviewing it, and we're coordinating with the public generating pool, and we will be developing comments to be submitted within the next 30 days as well. And no new products or services to present to you today. I'm moving on to slide number 5. This is a new slide that we presented to you recently, corresponding to our new hedge limits that are outlined in the new policies that you approved on March 23rd. Just a reminder, there are two new hedge limits that you're going to be seeing in the future. The first one associated with fixed prices. And the way that you should think about that is the amount of energy that we sell corresponding to stressed water conditions is basically what our new limit will be. The areas indicated on here in gray under the fixed price are the amount that is unhedged currently. And then on the other side of the graph, you will also see physical limits. And just a reminder, that is the amount of fixed energy that we're selling from the other graph on the left-hand side, and anything that we're selling at index prices. And the way that I think of this physical energy, it's anything that physically flows in and out of our balancing authority, our balancing area. So for Alcoa, for example, we purchase energy on their behalf, and so consequently, the amount of energy coming into our system at any given time would be the physical limit, or the fixed price limit, plus 175 megawatts corresponding to that. And moving on to slide number 6 is the market-based slice contracts that we currently have on our books. The one thing you'll note is that in 2020, down at the very bottom of the left-hand bar, you will see a light green corresponding to Avista. That will be rolling off our books at the end of 2020, but then you will also notice in 2021 the purple areas that are coming back in, and Avista basically is starting up a new slice beginning in 2021, and you'll be seeing that in the future as well. So I'm going to pause there and see if there's any questions through the first 6 slides and before I hand it over to Janet Jaspers.
Commissioners, any questions for Greg?
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Janet.
Good morning. This is Janet Jaspers, Director of Energy Planning and Trading, and I'm taking over on slide 7. And so on slide 7, we have just a contract for June 2020 Henry Hub natural gas prices, and you can see in the chart it had been kind of in the $2.60 region earlier, and then prices really have dropped off kind of last May, June, July. When we came to you last quarter on February 5th, we were right at the $2 handle. Now it has actually dropped another 13 cents, and so it's $1.87. So a lot of that is due to kind of the price drop is due to reductions in demand due to COVID-19. And it's really kind of putting downward pressure kind of across several months, future months too. Moving on to slide 8. It's just kind of a further look back historically back to 2002, what this same contract what the price did over that whole time frame. You can see kind of in 2005 to 2008 time frame, it did hit $14 per MMBTU, and kind of where it settled at $1.87 now. So quite a bit of price change over time. The next slide is slide 9 that I'm going to talk about. So slide 9 shows the NIDSE forward price curve out through 2025. So the dashed gray line is what we have at budget. So it's a snapshot on November 6, 2019 prices at that point. The current prices are in the solid black line. And then last quarter when we came to you, it was kind of the royal blue colored line. So taking a look at 2020 prices, you can see that the black line is quite a bit below where that dashed gray line was set up budget. And in 2020, you can also see the prices at that point. So kind of between at the bottom of the chart. And you can't, I know you can't see my pointer. I'm kind of circling my pointer here, but I know you can't see that. But at budget, 2020 flat prices was $28.30, and now it's $22.97, so a drop of $5.33 per megawatt hour. And then you can kind of see a similar decrease out in the out years, not quite as drastic, somewhere $3 and $4 per megawatt hour price drop in those years. So then moving on to slide 10, we have the 2020 net wholesale revenue forecast and other energy-related revenues. So in the top section, we have the net wholesale revenues kind of as a subcategory. And actually, a whole lot of things are rolled up into that. Some of the things that we have accounted for are Greg had kind of mentioned a price drop this year, which I just covered in the last line. So we're down about just over $5 per megawatt hour for the whole year 2020. And then Q1 flows in the Columbia River were really off. We're about 87% of normal. So we had less generation and we had lower prices. So we have those things affecting the net wholesale revenue. Off-system and use revenue is the next subcategory in the chart. It looks like it's $2.1 million down. That's really an indexed price deal. So there is kind of an equal and offsetting purchase, which is it's a top category. You don't see it as a separate line item, but it is in there. So really, the reduction, the $2.4 million in the lower right-hand corner, is really kind of mostly a reduction in generation, just because of that 87% of normal flows in Q1, and then also the $5 per megawatt hour price drop for the whole year 2020. So moving on to slide 11. So slide 11 is the net wholesale revenue plus off-system and use sales forecast. So last time we came to you is, current is the black line. And at budget, we were the dashed blue line. The last time we came to you was the Q4 2019 update, which is a solid blue line. And so you've seen so in 2020, on the left-hand side, the little black square is a little bit below the solid blue square. So we are down from budget, $2.4 million, which you can see there. And then if you look in the out years, just 26 and 27, where we really don't have much power hedged yet, you can see a little bit larger decrease. Moving on to market info on slide 12. So on the left, we have some snowpack data for California. And their snowpack as of April 29th was 42% of normal. So we're anticipating, and they really haven't got much precip since April 29th. So pretty low snowpack. And then over on the right, in the blue box on the right, we have North Las Vegas agrees to remain in the energy customer for $250,000 per year, so there is some negotiation going on. We're seeing this more and more. Some of the commercial and industrial customers, some of the cities and municipalities are trying to get out from under their retail provider, thinking that they could get some lower cost supply of power. And just what that means for Chelan PV, we're starting to see maybe some data centers, some other commercial industrial customers actually coming to us and looking to buy power. It's not just utilities coming to us looking to buy power. And so some of these cities and municipalities, along with the commercial industrial customers, are getting into the energy market. But on slide 13, we have the summary, kind of the same as what Greg had highlighted earlier, so I won't go over that. And I'd like to open it up for questions.
Yeah, Janet, this is Ann. Could you go back to slide 12 and again mention or just help me with the impact or what you see potentially could be the impact of what's going on here in California and Nevada to Chelan PUD?
So are you meaning the left-hand box, which is the low snowpack, or are you meaning the right-hand box?
The right-hand box, the movement of people turning to independent power marketers.
Yeah, so we have actually seen where traditionally we saw utilities being the purchasers coming to us. And so we're just seeing a lot of different buyers, and they have kind of different wants. And so there's a coalition of kind of people who want real clean energy who get together, and they have like six or seven different cities and municipalities who all want really clean energy. And we've seen kind of increasing the number of those who actually want clean hydro, or some of the customers actually want. And so some of the large data centers. Are wanting really clean power too. So, and they're wanting additionality. And so sometimes they want to see a solar plant being built. They want maybe some of the services from hydro, or they want new hydro and something kind of that can do load balancing and variable energy generation balancing from hydro. So we're just seeing a increased demand from customers who we haven't seen in the past.
So, Ann, this is Greg. Another thing to think about, too, is that a lot of our traditional counterparties that we've worked with in the past, which have been marketing companies and utilities and some renewable firms, the counterparties are starting to change in the energy market. So similar to our Microsoft deal, you're starting to see some towns that are wanting to be served separately, and some large customers. And another example of that is we're currently posting a job for the director, you know, to replace Brian and Holly. And even in us looking for jobs, what we're doing, what we're finding is a lot of the marketing and origination people that are out there right now are being recruited by large corporations for developing their own energy programs within the large corporations as well.
I see. So yeah, so we're going to see more of this, and we're going to have to be able to respond, be more nimble, and offer more products, and it's just going to be more complex and more convoluted, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, it's the next evolution of the energy market and the people that we work with is going to be changing, and we do need to stay on top of it and make sure that we pay attention to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions?
Okay, thank you, Greg and Janet. Next up on our agenda is the Quarterly Financial Review and Investment Report, and Mark Mullins and Craig Koons will be presenting.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. Hope everybody is doing well and staying safe. Mark Mullins, Director, Energy, Director, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And today I'll be presenting with Craig Koons. And we're going to go through the quarter-ended Q1, March 31st, 2020, quarterly update regarding our financial results. So this presentation supports a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board on compliance with our long-range financial policies, business line financial policies, and our investment policy, as well as the board's balanced scorecard objective of maintaining strong financial stewardship. So moving over to page 2. Today, we're going to cover the financial highlights associated with our first quarter results in Q1. We'll take a look at the five-year look ahead, as well as our investment report, and we'll leave you with some key messages. This is an update only, no action required. There is some additional information in the back that you'll find in the appendix, but we're not going to cover that in the presentation today unless there are questions. So moving to page 3, our Q1 2020 key highlights. Our bottom line results ending Q1 were at $17.7 million, or just less than $1 million better than budget. There were some offsetting impacts in Q1 associated with lower retail revenue regarding customer usage, and also lower revenue on our long-term contracts associated with lower hydro costs. And those were more than offset by lower operating costs across the district as we're adapting to a new environment related to COVID-19. We're forecasting the year to be below budget at $4.4 million at this point in time. We are anticipating continued lower retail revenues and continued lower revenue on our long-term base contracts due to the COVID-19 impacts and shutdowns and work slowdowns. And this will partially offset by slightly lower operating expenditures that we have in the forecast right now. But I would like to caveat this with, it's still really early in the year, obviously only reporting on Q1, but just with respect to COVID-19 impacts and what we expect to learn over the course of the next several weeks as we finish out the Q2, we expect there's going to be some significant changes that we'll be reporting on at that point in time. So it's still really early to tell. The district's financial metrics are being met with borrowing expected in 2022. To cover liquidity and our days cash on hand metrics, and this is consistent with what we've been reporting in the past. So our recommendation at this time is to stay the course with our new approved strategic goals regarding 2020 and 2020 through 2024, but just recognizing the need that we need to adapt along the way as we have in the recent weeks, but certainly as we go forward as well. Moving over to page 4, speaking specifically on the COVID-19 financial impacts, really for Q1, it was a fairly minimal impact that we saw. There was lower revenues, and that was offset by some lower costs. But what we are expecting to see as we move into the year is the lower revenue associated with retail and our hydro long-term contracts are going to certainly have an impact on that. And it's not going to be quite as great as our lower operating expenses. So we do expect to be below the budget at the end of the year at this point in time. Right now, retail electric usage is currently forecasted to be at 95% of the budget. But again, this was as of 3/31, so I think we'll have impacts that we'll see as reflected in our Q2 results and forecast going forward. And this is also true for our capital and O&M projects that have been paused while the senior management and staff identify ways to resume work, and certainly doing that in a safe manner based on all the requirements and guidance that we've received both of the federal, state, and our local health agencies. So with that, as I mentioned, Q2 results in the forecast is really it's really uncertain right now to really understand the impacts of lower usage from the retail perspective, the COVID-19 programs, and also our delayed work but we expect Q2 will provide better insight as we move in through time and we learn a lot more about what the impacts are. But this is also a good place to just highlight the resilience that we've achieved through our prudent financial policies, our strong cash position, but also associated with risk management and hedge policies. And I'd like to highlight the efforts that have gone on over the last several years regarding our business continuity plan, where those have certainly come into play as we react to and create actions associated with COVID-19. So all of these factors combined have really enabled us to weather the storm of COVID-19. Moving on to page 5, I'll do a quick overview of the income statement. On the revenue side, our service revenue is down about $2.7 million, primarily due to lower usage due to COVID-related load impacts. But also we had a milder winter as well, so that's impacting some of our financial results. We do have the off-system in-use sale that has an index or a market price index component to that. So the prices that you heard Janet alluding to with respect to $5 less than where we set at budget, this is impacting that revenue stream as well. And we report the off-system in-use sale in the retail revenue bucket as opposed to the net wholesale revenue bucket that Janet was referring to earlier. Moving on to that next line, the net wholesale revenue, and this is just a tribute to the hedging program that we have in place with lower generation, certainly, but also with the impacts of pricing, we're down only $0.2 million at this point in time with respect to budget. On the hydro long-term contract revenue, this is below budget just due to lagging spend and lower production costs, and then other operating revenue is pretty much in line with budget. So forecasted for the year at this point in time, and again, it is early, but roughly estimating will be about $9 million below budget from a revenue perspective. On the expense side, below budget by $6.3 million. A lot of this has to do with the delayed work regarding COVID-19. From a hydro O&M perspective, we are expected to catch up based on the forecast in these financial results. However, it is too early to tell, so we will learn more as we go through Q2. Non-operating net expense is better than budget, primarily due to the benefits received from a lower interest expense on our variable rate debt. So for the year, $4.5 million below budget on our operating expenditures is the expectation at this point, but more to come as we get into the year. So from a bottom line perspective, we're forecasting $53.7 million or $4.4 million below budget for the year at this time. Moving on to page 6, I'll do a quick overview of our balance sheet. With respect to capital, as you might guess, we're lagging $9.8 million below pace. Of course, COVID-19 has had an impact on this as well. We are forecasting to be at $8 million below for the year, but this is the statement I keep repeating. More to come, certainly, as we get into to Q2. But just to highlight some of the primary drivers, certainly Rock Island modernization, the Operations Service Center, and the facilities associated with Rock Island and Rocky Reach are drivers of the capital spend for 2020. We did build $6 million of cash in Q1, ending the quarter at $621 million. We are continuing to plan to spend, pay-as-you-go capital planning, ending the year at $515 million is what our forecast is at this point. On the debt side, we're planning to reduce debt through our planned reductions of $39 million, ending the year at $436 million. We are slightly off from budget, as we do have in the wastewater system. We have a cash balance in there that we can leverage to pay down those loans. So it's just a difference between our budget assumption versus where we're at today. But we'll certainly have more to come on that as we go throughout the year. So with that, I'll pause and see if there's any questions so far on the high-level overview, and then I'll turn it over to Craig. Hearing okay, no questions. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was going to start in, Mark. This is Craig.
Yep, go ahead, Craig.
Craig Coons, Manager of Strategic Financial Planning. I'm going to stay on slide six really quick. Just at the bottom of the debt box, I would note that the April bond financing to be reflected in Q2. So all the bond activity that occurred, Mark alluded to it. I just want to be clear on that, as some expectations might be different based on the recent bond activity. Those aren't reflected in these figures I'm about to show. So moving on to slide seven, Mark did a very good job covering this. I'm just going to hit some highlights. Service revenue, you can see it's 93% of budget. And again, that's primarily due to the off-system sales market pricing, the index pricing on those that are included in service revenue. There is some impact due to COVID, load impact, and the mild winter. I'm going to drop down to depreciation and tax expense. You'll see that's 96% of budget. That's primarily driven to depreciation expense, similar to last year. With the significant capital investments we have forecasted, if we don't put those into service, if we have an adjustment in Q4 after the budget's established, depreciation is going to be less because we have less capital being placed into service, and those activities go into the next year. That's causing that slight number being less than what the budget expectation was. And then finally, on non-operating activity, that's forecasted to be above budget. That's a net expense. That's primarily driven to the recent public power benefit increase from $4 million to $6 million. That's driving up that forecast compared to what the budget expectations were. Moving on to slide eight, business line bottom line results. You can see Integrated Electric, which is pretty much our electric services. That's all driven primarily by the service revenue on the retail side and a little bit of the low hydro cost-based revenue, but that's offset by the cost-based expenses. Fiber is pretty much in line. Water is a little bit better than budget, and that's primarily driven by contributions and aid of construction. And wastewater, that loss is a little bit better than budget, and again, that's primarily driven to the depreciation expense that I referred to earlier. We have less depreciation flowing through that system than we budgeted for. Moving on to slide nine, capital expenditures. Again, as Mark alluded to, this forecast was based as of March 31st, and we do that forecast pretty early in March as far as getting the numbers down, in April. And the COVID impacts are going to be reflected probably better in the April reporting and then be shown to you in the Q2 update. But a couple items I will note in regards to electric distribution. That's primarily driven to some work related to the substations, the North Shore work, and the Wenatchee sub. That's why that's being forecasted to be quite a bit below budget. Then I'll bring your eyes to the internal services, which is forecasted at this time at 110%. That is going to drop down quite a bit when we do the update, which we've already started working preliminarily on April. There's going to be a $10 million reduction in the forecast associated with the Rocky Reach CM facilities expenditures. So that would be dropped out below budget expectations. Those are the two I really wanted to highlight. I'm going to move on to slide 10. This is looking at our overview year-to-date cash flow. We have bottom line results of $18 million. We add back our non-cash expense depreciation, $29 million. We've expended $11 million on capital investments year-to-date. Then we did a lot of other activities like paying down payables and the such, but we added $6 million to our cash reserves. So beginning of the year, we were at $615 million. We added $6 million, and so our cash and investments at the end of Q1 were $621 million. Moving on to slide 11, this is just a comparison of our basically cash and investments balance from year-end to where we are currently. You can see our unrestricted funds really haven't changed. We still have the $50 million in our headquarters and service center, which gets us our total unrestricted funds of $415 million. We also have our restricted funds, which is kind of our DRC, CRC funds that we used to do pay-as-you-go capital for Reach and Rock Island. Pretty similar, so we're at $530 million at total liquidity. Then we also have our bond reserve funds, power contract deposits, and self-insurance. So pretty much our cash and investments from the end of the year 2019 to Q1 are pretty much in line. You can see the $6 million increase from 615 to 621. Moving on to slide 12, these are our financial policy metrics. I'm going to spend a little bit more time on this. These metrics are pretty consistent to where we were in Q4. We're still borrowing in 2022 to meet liquidity. When we did this, you'll note that the day's cash on hand is highlighted as red. It's not at 250. We've changed our methodology within the forecasting models. We're borrowing the money to maintain liquidity and days cash on hand. That's been rectified. So although it's red because the official numbers as of Q1 were below the 250, it was really just something we just had to adjust to make sure we're borrowing to maintain liquidity and days cash on hand. So all the other numbers are pretty much consistent to where we were before. Moving on to slide 13, looking at our quarterly reporting for our business lines. Now these are the new business lines that were adopted, the new metrics. And those metrics really trigger for 2024 and 2029. That's why those columns are highlighted. I would note in water, in 2024, we're just slightly below the targeted number of 104% for operating cover percentage. And cash reserves, the $3.2 million, is quite a bit below, but we're still evaluating how we want to alleviate that situation because we have to balance that with our debt service percentage as a revenue, which is currently at 8.4, which is below the 12%. So there's work going on in the water system to get these metrics in line as we continue to try to get those consistent to the expectations for the 2024 and meeting the 2029 targets, which aren't here. Moving on to slide 14, looking at wastewater, you can see that the operating coverage percentage exceeds the target, but is within 10%, so we highlighted as yellow. As Mark alluded to earlier, we are exceeding the cash reserve by quite a bit. Where the target is above 200,000 and we're at 2.3 million. Conversely, you can see the debt service percentage is red because it's high. Now, we have the cash to begin to pay down that debt, but we're kind of waiting to get the Potassium Funds Agreement closed until we do that transaction where we alleviate some of that cash to pay down that debt. So we expect that to happen in the near future. Moving on to slide 15, this is fiber. Again, it's exceeding its target of operating cover percentage, but it's within 10%, so it's highlighted in yellow. And the cash reserve target 2024 is greater than 2 million, and we're forecasted at 8.8 million. And again, I'll just repeat myself that these figures do not reflect the financing activity that occurred post Q1 results. But those will be shown in the April reporting internally as well as the Q2 update. Moving on to slide 16, the quarterly investment report. Just all policies and objectives are being met. I said the one thing I would note is that our yield is down to 2.48 for Q1, and we did budget it for 2020 at 2.61. And just to give that some context, you know, we have these different laddered investments that have different earnings, but a drop of 0.13% on $600 million of cash is about $750,000 of earnings. So I would expect our interest earnings to be below budget as we move through the year as we're earning less on the investment portfolio for those that are subject to market conditions. So moving on to the slide 17, key messages. The 2020 forecasts are lower than budget, although year-to-date is a little bit above budget. Post Q1, the debt action will be reflected in the next quarterly update. There is still a lot of uncertainty around the impacts due to COVID and what that means in regards to scheduling the major projects and the financial impacts associated with that. But our long-term financial metrics remain really strong, and we recommend staying the course with the 2024 strategic plan goals. But we got to be nimble enough to adapt to any COVID-19 circumstances that may arise that would offer up a course correction if needed. And with that, I'll leave it open to any questions or comments you may have.
Craig, this is Dennis.
Go ahead, Dennis.
In an earlier slide, you used the phrase internal services. Can you share with me what is defined by internal services? What does that incorporate?
Sure. So the way you can look at it, we have, Rocky Reach, a is kind of a standalone operation and Rock Island is kind of standalone operations. We have a lot of investments that are shared. A good example would be a headquarters building. So that services the water department, the wastewater system, the fiber system. We call those internal services or shared assets.
Okay.
And in context to what I was saying, the work being done at Rocky Reach is for central maintenance work. And that's going to be shared amongst, you know, the Reach, Rock Island, and Chelan. So it's kind of a shared service for the hydros.
Okay, that makes sense. I appreciate the definition.
You bet.
Thank you.
This is Gary, and I'd just like to make a comment more than anything else. And if we can go back to slide number 6 and take a look at cash balance and debt, that those two numbers are incredible. And it really goes to show staff's efforts on getting our debt under control and building a cash balance. And it is a tremendous 180-degree turn from 10 years ago. And I just want to congratulate staff for an excellent job.
Thank you for those comments, Commissioner. Appreciate that. It's a team effort, certainly. A lot of people participate in the financial activities and the impacts on the district, but also from a planning perspective, too, and all the considerations associated with that. Definitely a team effort.
If there are no other comments from commissioners, two things. One, to go back to Commissioner Arsenault's comment, I think that was board direction to go this path. So we'll certainly say that the strategic plan that the board adopted had a big impact on where we've ended up with respect to debt and cash. I would like to offer a couple other comments because I'm on a lot of calls with utilities from across the country, especially our public power colleagues, around impacts of COVID-19. And I don't mean to gloat, but I do want to make sure that you know, because you're going to hear this from some of your colleagues, that we are in much better shape than many of the other utilities around the country, and there are a few reasons for that. One, the fact that only 20% of our revenues come at retail makes a big difference in this moment, because many utilities are seeing a substantial drop-off on their retail loads. And when they reduce those retail loads, then it reduces their revenue, and their retail rates are significantly higher than the wholesale revenue they can generate. So they see a pretty dramatic reduction when that energy moves from a retail sale into a wholesale sale. I will say that that gives us an advantage. There's no, that 80% of our revenue that's coming in at wholesale is under contract. There is no current threat to the existing wholesale contracts that we're aware of. And so that it's pretty good, but I do have to say we also have to be concerned about where the future of the economy is going to go. There's a lot of conversation out there about the big question for the shape of the economy, and it tends to come in the shape of letters. You hear the V shape, that there'll be a quick recovery, the U shape, that it'll be slow, but it will come back to the levels before COVID-19, the W shape, which is, boy, what if there's a reemergence of COVID? So it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up. Or the worst of all, the L shape, which is we're going to have a sustained economic recession. That really makes a big difference for us because it would have an impact on new surplus sales contracts. We're a long utility, and a robust economy, strong economy is definitely good for us. So you saw earlier the graphs that Janet presented that show that we have exposure out in the later years, which of course makes sense because we make laddered sales, slice sales contracts. What the price for those contracts will be very important to us. It turns out, though, that I want to just go back for a moment. The decision that was made a couple of years ago to offer the 10-year product to Avista that starts next year meant that we were not in the market this year for a slice sale. And that turns out to be really lucky. I'd love to tell you that it was really smart on our part, but sometimes it's a combination of good luck and skill, and this one was probably a bit more on the luck side. One other comment I would make is while our revenues are down a little bit, you'll notice that our costs are down too. COVID slows activity. You've seen that in our performance plan report. The downside right now is particularly with respect to hydro projects, but generally projects across the board are just moving slower than we would like for them to. That does reduce costs. The downside on the hydro projects is it's unlikely we'll be returning as many units to service as what our plan was for this year. And so that, unfortunately, flips back over to having an impact on the revenue side. Overall, though, for 2020, just as the Craig and Mark have described, we're really pretty close to what our start of year forecast is and a lot closer than most of the utilities around the country. Any questions about that before we move on? Okay, I want to say thank you to Mark and Craig, and we will now move to agenda item 5, which is the Integrated Resource Plan Load and Resource Forecast. Becky, are you on?
Yes, I'm here.
We're turning it over to you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, commissioners. I'm here to start the talks on the 2020 Integrated Resource Plan, and I want to let you know there's no action being requested of you today, just providing information, starting the process. As a little refresher, I'd like to just remind everyone that Integrated Resource Plans and subsequent progress reports are required under state law. And at a very high level, they're an analysis describing the mix of generation resources and conservation and efficiency resources that will meet the utility's projected needs at the lowest reasonable cost in the utility and its ratepayers. I'm going to move on to slide 2. Specifically today, what we'd like to start talking about is the load forecast. We have done our load forecast for the IRP, and then subsequently the renewable resources that the district will be required to have under this planning period, which goes through 2030, under the Washington State Renewable Portfolio. We'll talk more about that. District's 10-year conservation target, as well as the district's net position and local
to the with the mower.
Commissioner McKenna, you'll need to go on mute, please.
Who did? Oh.
Hang on 1 second, Becky, okay? Commissioner McKenna?
Yes.
You'll need to go on mute.
I apologize. I was moving from one place to another, and I will do that.
Yeah, no problem. Just wanted you to know.
Thank you.
Okay, Becky, back to you.
Okay, thank you. We'll lay out the district's net position through the planning period in relation to the load forecast, and then also talk about our portfolio results. Moving on to slide 3, this is our tentative schedule for this year's board and public process schedule. Of course, today, initial results coming back tentatively June 15th with our final IRP document for your review, and then coming back on July 6th for the hearing to approve the IRP. And then the IRP will be submitted to the Washington State Department of Commerce along with their cover sheet prior to September 1st. Moving to slide 4. the load forecast is primarily an econometric load forecast. So the load group here at the district works on it, and we do it by class, kind of a ground-up forecast. And this year's forecast is, all three forecasts, the low, base, and high, are lower than they were in 2018 when we did the last progress report, and that's primarily due to decreases in the high-density load forecast. You can see, and I need to mention that these forecasts are gross forecasts, meaning that they are not net of conservation. The IRP process conservation is looked at as a resource, so we layer that on separately. You'll see, excuse me, low 0.69, base 1.75, high 5.8. You can see that those are all lower than the 2018 forecast. And to give a little perspective in relation to our historical forecast, our historical actuals, our the last 10 years, our approximate growth 1.47 weather normalized growth. In a gross context, and then net of conservation, about 0.89% over the last 10 years. And I mentioned earlier that we are required to have renewables under the Washington State Renewable Portfolio Standard, and through this planning period of now through 2030, it's 15% of retail load in what they consider renewables under that standard, of which our incremental hydro qualifies. We expect to have plenty of that through the planning period, and that ranges from 31 to 34 average megawatts through that 2030 planning period. That's how we're expecting to cover that. Moving on to slide 5, it's a just a graphical representation of the load forecast. The low, base, and high, and those, again, are the gross forecasts. The first 10 years there, you can see what our weather-normalized actuals have been, net of conservation. Moving to slide 6. This is our bar graph of our 10-year conservation targets. The district, the commission has already been presented with these, and they were submitted to the Department of Commerce earlier this year. They're based on the 2019 conservation potential assessment. And they total over 16 average megawatts through our 2030 planning period that we're talking about. Moving on to slide 7. This graph represents the district's resource positions with the load forecast that we were talking about overlaid. Now, these resource positions are, we can see, based where we would expect to be based on low, average, and high water. But additionally, the long-term wholesale contracts are taken off the top of this. They're not included. And then you can see the grayed out area in the near-term years is where we have sold off the short-term slices. And then you see our position increasing in the 28, 29, 2030 period on this chart, and that is due to the expiration of the long-term Alcoa contract. Moving on to slide 8. So based on this analysis, our low, base, and high levels of hydro generation and our low, base, and high low growth forecast, the district is expected to be able to meet its retail load through the planning period of 2030 without any new power supplies. As enough, the conservation resources, which were included in there as well, have increased since 2018. The CPA is producing results of 1.49 average megawatts through this planning period a year. The district portfolio meets the council's, the Northwest Power and Conservation Council's voluntary loss of load probability standard. And then, as Greg mentioned earlier, there's a large new effort going on with the Northwest Power Pool to develop a capacity to be able to, the capacity resource adequacy standard, and to be able to manage it in a coordinated effort. So the district's heavily involved in that, and I think expects to join that program once it's up and running. Our district's portfolio could change in the future based on those reliability standard needs. Of course, the district's hydro and wind resources do not emit any air pollutants, and however, the district is a purchaser of some unspecified market resources on certain hours of the year. Slide 9, this is a snapshot of the district's IRP webpage, and there's a link on there in blue, the contact us link. If anybody has any questions or comments, they could submit them through that link. We will continue to add our schedule here, as well as our presentations, and of course the draft document and the final document once that takes place. Slide 10, any questions?
Commissioners, any questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, commissioners, I am hoping that Tim Pettit is on the line. Tim, are you with us?
I am, Steve. Okay.
So I want to take a moment to thank Tim. So Tim will be retiring May 31st. Have tried to talk him out of this a couple times. Was successful once, but not successful this time around. Y'all will recall that he was in charge of our line group for a long time, doing a fantastic job, incredible safety record for that group. And then I guess it was more than a year ago that we asked him to come in and take over the role for safety and HPI. And I just feel like we have made incredible progress in the time that Tim has led this group. Really amazing in terms of commitment and focus around very clear targets. These are the things we need to get done, and then going and making them happen, and making them happen in a way that there was very little consternation around it either. What didn't seem to be coming back with, well, here's a problem or there's a problem, that just got done. I just feel like the district is in much better shape today in terms of our safety profile and our thinking about HPI as a result of Tim's leadership. And I just wanted to take a moment and appreciate the fantastic job that he has done. He's a true gentleman as well, always finds a way to get things done and do it with a smile on his face. And I just can't say how much I appreciate him. And I wanted to just have a moment for the board to be able to recognize Tim as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board.
Tim, this is Dennis. And sometimes your first impressions or your early impressions become lasting impressions. And I don't think it was too long after you had been pirated away from Pacific County and had joined Chelan County, that we had a blowdown situation up in Ferry County. And our crew that was helping out up there did not necessarily represent our organization quite as well as perhaps maybe they could have. And their general manager called John Janey, our general manager, and said that he was sending the crews home. And I believe John called you and, let you in on that news. And John said he was going to take care of it. And you said, no, I'll take care of it. And since that time, everything you've touched has been handled as well as that situation there's been an assurance of quality and service, intelligence, cheerfulness, willingness, and a whole lot of other adjectives. So just wanted to say thanks for a job well done. Don't be a stranger. We're going to miss you. And thanks for everything you've done for the PUD.
Well, Dennis, that I'll wait till the end here, but I'm kind of at a loss for words.
Well, that's so good.
So, Tim, this is Randy. And, you know, as I watched you take on this new role, I had known from the past, as a matter of fact, we actually here at Chelan have always been held a little bit, you know, as the bad boys. The Pacific people are still mad that you left over down there. I know that. So you started to irritate in Pacific when you left, but I know why, because you are so good. And when you took over the Human Performance Initiative, one of the things that hit me was, as a retired business person, I looked at what you were doing and the culture that you were helping to create within our organization about safety, and it was to me like a dream that I could never have achieved in my own business, and knowing it was the right place to go, because you created a culture where top to bottom employees were embracing the ideal of creating a better workplace through a set of criteria. And I'm going to miss you. I know that, because I don't know how we're going to end up replacing you. That's going to be really, really hard, because it's a special touch that you have with the knowledge and a touch for the people and a true caring about every person in this organization that shows in your everyday actions. So thanks for all that you have done.
Thank you so much, Randy. Just truly appreciate the kind words.
So, Tim, this is Steve McKenna. Just a couple of quick thoughts, because so much has already been said by my fellow commissioners. But, you know, I think a true sign of how people feel about you is when the news comes out that you've decided to retire and all you hear is, oh, no, are you kidding me? We've got to talk him into staying, and he can't leave. And but at some point, you know, you've got to let people go and send them on their way with pats on the back and appreciation, and we're reluctantly doing that for sure. But I think Randy said something so important, and Dennis as well, as a culture changer. And, you know, as you're aware of, I'm really big into system thinking and system improvement and developing a culture where learning is at the heart of safety and performance and getting better, which in the end result, when we all go to work and we're in an organization that is a quality place, we all like that. But trying to get that culture embedded, ingrained, part of the daily behavior and thinking is no easy task, because change is difficult and people look at that and say, oh, this is just one more thing. This is a new thing coming at us, and this too shall pass if we just ignore it. And what you've done is brought the credibility that this is important, this is you, this is us, we are better, we are a quality organization, and for this I am gratefully appreciative. Thank you very much, and good luck with your retirement.
Thank you, Steve. Again, I just kind of shocked at the words, and I just truly appreciate them.
Tim, this is Gary, and I'd like to say a few words. First of all, I'm going to start off by saying I had the unique privilege of knowing Tim before I became a commissioner, as he was my neighbor. He lived next door to me. And I had the ability to witness the way he conducted himself. And Steve Wright said, a gentleman, and that is an understatement. He is definitely a gentleman. He cares deeply for people, and he cares extremely deeply for young adults who need a strong adult to emulate, to watch, to see, and to form their own future. And while I'm terribly sorry to see Tim retire, and I think our institution will certainly suffer from his not being at the helm, what I will say is I think his future in terms of helping young adults and providing guidance to the young people is both a noble cause and also one in which I think he will excel at, and I think is a calling for Tim. And so, Tim, while I will miss you and while I appreciate very much what you have done for us at the district, I also think it's quite noble what it is that your thoughts and your plans are for the future. And so I congratulate you on a wonderful career, and I look forward to hearing more stories about your future and how you're impacting all the young people that you come in touch with. So thank you for the time that you've spent at our district, and thank you for the time that you've given to help build such an incredible safety program.
Thank you so much, Gary, and I'm sure we'll be talking quite a bit more on the friendship level as the future unfolds.
Look forward to it.
This is Ann. Tim, I just want to say thank you so much. I will miss you. Well, I'll miss you. I'd rather speak with you in person. That's just kind of my style more. And so I will see you at your retirement party or reception, and I look forward to talking with you then.
Thank you, Ann. If I may, just to reflect for a minute here, as we all know, everything is, especially here at the district, falls to the team effort. And Steve laid out some very clear expectations, which really helped. A couple of those were, when we were discussing this position, and Steve was very, very strong and very adamant that we needed to make some adjustments. A lot of people were doing a lot of work already, and if we could make some adjustments and get better at safety and our human performance improvement initiative, that was his primary goals. But he also wanted to not, he, we knew we needed to build a team, but he said, we want to build a team of leaders. And I've made a number of changes through my careers and my life, and for some reason, I've had the ability to know when it's time to move on. And I think we really, we succeeded in the direction that Steve gave. And he did a great job of guiding this along the way. Through multiple discussions, we continued to adjust and move. And as Steve and I spoke last week, I let him know that my specific staff, that I really believe we accomplished one of the goals that he gave me, and that is without this team, I certainly wouldn't have been successful at all. And I truly believe that each one of my direct reports is a true leader. They have stepped up and continue to give it their all every day. And I know as I exit that the district is in great hands. I wouldn't have felt comfortable leaving if we hadn't have reached the goals that Steve had requested of me. And I believe we reached those goals. And listening to the words, commissioners, of all of you, I guess for lack of better words, I'm just going to say thank you. I'm kind of, again, at a loss for words, but just reflecting back on all that you've said, I'm sure I'll be awake tonight thinking about that. So anyway, thank you, commissioners. Thank you, Steve, for this opportunity and for the leadership and guidance that you've given me through this opportunity. Without that, I know I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
Well, I think you can get a sense that Tim is a guy who wears his emotions on his sleeve, and I think that's part of his strength and what causes so many people to want to follow him when he chooses to lead. And he's done a marvelous job of figuring out how to assert himself, when's the right place for him to take on the leadership role, and when's the right time to delegate to his staff. And we're just a much better organization as a result of that. I would like the board to know that while this is Tim's last board meeting as an employee, that you will get to see him again. He is going to come back for our June meeting. He has shepherded our activities with respect to responding to the recommendations that came out of the Bromley investigation. That is pretty much wrapped up. We just concluded that it would be better to present it at the next board meeting. Tim has agreed to come back because he played such a significant role in pulling that together that we really need him to be here to talk about what has happened and what we've learned from it and what our next steps will be as well. So with that, it turns out we're not saying goodbye to Tim. All we're saying is thanks to Tim for all of his great work so far. Commissioners, with that, we actually have come to the end of our morning studying session agenda. We're in great shape on time, ahead of actually where I thought we would be. And as a result, if you would like, we have made arrangements that we could move to the afternoon regular agenda. At this point, you stay on course with the consent agenda as was discussed this morning, we only have two resolutions. I think there's a pretty good chance we could get those done, and I think there's a pretty good chance we could get our manager's items done as well before the noon hour. Just want to check and see if that's acceptable with the commission.
Commissioners, that sound okay?
You bet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, then with that, I would turn it back to Commissioner Arsenault to address the consent agenda.
All right. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us.
I would move approval of the consent agenda, which is in modified to include resolutions 9, 10, 11, 13, and 14.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. And so it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of the consent agenda, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it. So, Steve, we would move on then to the regular agenda.
Yes, so let me just check real quick. Are Kirk Hudson and Scott Tidd on the line?
Kirk's here.
Scott's here.
Great. Okay, then we're going to move to Resolution 12. This is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 26, 27, 28, to 28A for B10 and authorizing the general manager to execute field work order change orders number 4-10 for B7 and 6-02 for B8 for contracts number 04-01, Part B for the Rock Island B5-10 Rehabilitation Project with Andritz Hydro Corporation. Kirk's going to start off with an overview as where we are overall with Rock Island, and then Scott will be presenting some of the specifics relative to this resolution.
Good morning, Commissioners. Just want to point to page 74 in the board effect document that has the overview we provided to you in January this year of each of the units at Rock Island Powerhouse 1 and what status they're in. I want to briefly summarize the work we're doing there and provide context for the resolution. If we start from left and work our way right, just as a reminder, B1 through 4 are all out of service, undergoing modernization for replacing the turbines. Units 5 and 7 are out of service as well, and they are going undergoing generator and turbine modernization work. So we work over to B10. You might recall B10 was the first unit that completed modernization work and has some repairs to be made with some parts that have failed since it was restored to service. Starting with B10, was removed from service in January 2019 due to a thrust equalizing system leak. We performed a disassembly at that time. This is where we did the investigation regarding the vibration. You might recall that we were observing on B9 and 10. That's where we identified the additional parts that needed to be replaced. So we settled on a scope of responsibility with the contractor and costs. That was detailed in field work order 25. Instead of having B10 remaining offline for a long period of time awaiting those parts in a shop, we decided to take care of the thrust equalizing system leak and then reassemble the unit, which is what we're doing as we speak. Got a number of items in the resolution associated with additional work required for the modernization of B7 and the repair of B10. Need to purchase a spare head cover as well to have available for future modernization planned for B8. If that's not enough, we're also at the point where we're addressing some costs associated with the contract with COVID-19, the suspension of work, the temporary suspension of work. So just if you look at that figure, Steve referred to the earlier in terms of the number of units we had planned to return to service this year. We had 4 planned to return to service at Rock Island. We're still working feverishly to try and return 3 of those to service. It looks like because of the delays, B3 is in likely not to be returned to service in 2020, but we're still working to try and keep B4, B7, and B10, get those to the point where we can return them to service this year. With that, I'll turn it over to Scott to walk through the details of the resolution.
Good morning, Commissioners. General Manager Kirk. Unit B10, to resolve the original thrust equalizing system oil leak, we authorized Andritz to proceed with a piston seal redesign, and that is field work order 26, and that field work order has been executed and awaits ratification by the board. So that's part of today's resolution. During disassembly of this unit, alignment readings were evaluated and a realignment of the unit was deemed necessary. Field work order 27 was executed for the additional work required and it awaits ratification by the board. Contractors work inside Powerhouse 1, we're still on B10, contractors work inside Powerhouse 1 was suspended on March 23rd. Contractor was directed to continue to perform work at other locations outside of the powerhouse. Contractor was also directed to retain a supervisory workforce on site to progress engineering, procurement, project management tasks in order to be better prepared to restart the work in the powerhouse. So So field work order 28, the work, that was the first part of the work suspension. It was capped at 4 weeks, and that ended on April 19th. We kept the numbering similar, so we made a field work order 28A, which was going to cap it at, again, at another 4 weeks, and that one ends on May 17th. The work suspension in these two field work orders is attached to Unit B10, and it applies to the follow-on units of B5 and B8 as well. These two field work orders await board action for ratification. The district has given Andres notice that they are authorized to recommence with their work in Powerhouse 1 on May 18th. So based upon that May 18th restart, Unit B10 is scheduled to be returned to service in August of this year. So moving on to B7, Unit B7, if there's no questions on that. Unit B7 is currently out of service and undergoing modernization. So during the repairs, it was discovered that the vertical dimension where the wicket gates operate was smaller than original drawing dimensions. To correct that problem, the upper and lower stay ring surfaces were ground to provide a larger dimension. The cost of the additional work is $210,000. We are asking the board to authorize the GM to execute field work order 4-10, as Kirk mentioned earlier. Kind of interesting, shop work on this unit has not been affected by the coronavirus pandemic, and work remains underway in the shop over in Spokane. The blade stick slip issue is being addressed during the modernization work of B7. So what we've learned through B10, we are applying to B7. B7 is scheduled to be returned to service in November of this year. Moving on to units B5 and B8. Site work to modernize unit B5, which is the fifth unit, began in December of 2019. Some items were initially proposed for reuse, such as the outer head cover. A spare outer head cover was procured under previously executed and ratified Field Work Order 5-04 in the event the B5 existing head cover was determined unusable. An evaluation is now ruled that it is not usable, so the spare will be used on B5. Unit B8 is on a schedule to be disassembled in mid-2021. Like B5, the contract scope assumed reuse of the head cover. Since B6, B7, and B5 have all needed new head covers, staff recommends purchase of a new one now instead of waiting for unit disassembly because of the one-year lead time to procure. We could wait to disassemble the unit to perform the evaluation. However, if a new head cover is found to be needed in mid-2021, it would delay completion by about 1 year at a total cost impact greater than purchase of a spare. The probability of needing the new head cover is about 80%. Therefore, staff recommends procurement of a new head cover now for a contract increase of $513,000. We are asking the board to authorize the GM to execute field work order 6-02. The blade stick slip issue is being addressed during modernization work on all of these units. Work was suspended on March 23rd due to the coronavirus pandemic, and again, we are scheduled to restart on May 18th. So one other thing that's important to mention here is the costs due to the work suspension because of the coronavirus pandemic that we're talking about here for the 0401B contract will also be coming to the board later for the 1660 contract, which is for units B1 through B4. Are there any questions on any of that? Hopefully everybody heard me okay.
Scott, we could hear you really well. I would like to do a summary just coming from a different perspective to help the board understand what we're doing here. If you think about it in terms of dollars expended, there's a little more than $400,000 worth of work for B7 through 10 that is consistent with the previous presentations to the board about our goals to try to get those units back this year. There's an additional a little more than $500,000 for the head cover now that we know that the B5 V5 head cover is not repairable. We'll be using the spare that we have. We're really glad the board authorized the acquisition of that head cover in the past because it's going to save us a lot of time in terms of getting V5 back up. And we think there's a pretty darn good probability that we will need another head cover for B8. So we want to move forward and pick up another spare for B8. There's some small risk that B8 will not need to be repaired, in which case we'd have a spare head cover that we would just have available to us. But the savings in terms of being able to get that unit back online much quicker, or at least the revenue potential for that, makes this seem like a good decision. And finally, there is the roughly $160,000 for choosing to delay the project. So this was a choice that we made, management made, when COVID really took off to shut down this work. We knew there would be costs associated with that. About $160,000 for the B5 through 10 work. And as Scott suggested, there's another $160,000 that will be coming for the B1 through 4 work that's not included in this resolution. Let me just check and confirm. My understanding is that we issued notice to Andritz last week to begin the two-week process to get back to work, believing that they could be back on-site doing the work in the week of May 17th. Is that correct, Kirk?
That is correct. They received that. I got notification that they received it up to their president level. At least he got it on Friday, and I'm not sure. It probably went out before that. But, yeah, they've received it and acknowledged so.
Kirk, this is Randy. Just a curiosity question about that head cover. You've got 10 turbines there, 10 generators there. How many duplications on the head covers are there? Are all 10 of them the same?
I'll let Scott speak to the differences, but particularly between B1 through 4 and B5 through 10. Scott, you want to call out the differences there?
Yeah, the B1 through B4 are getting new head covers, and that was as originally planned. On the B5 through B10 head covers, they were initially figured to just reuse their existing head covers, and we got that happened on B10 and B9. By the time we hit the third unit on B6, it got a new one, and as each one has come out, we've inspected it, blasted it, and inspected it, and evaluated it, and so all of them from there on have needed new head covers. We've determined that the existing ones just aren't going to survive the life that we're looking for.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Kirk, if I may, this is Dennis. You started this Resolution 12 presentation out with an illustration. Is this a new illustration, or have you used one similar to this before?
We used it about 4 years ago just as a way to describe the various statuses of the units, and then we updated it in January and sent it out as well just to illustrate how many units we had planned to bring back in service this year. So it's the same one in January, and I'm inclined to only update it annually because things change so fast it would be hard to keep track of what our plans were for the year. So it's the one that the board saw in January without any of the dates changed.
Okay, let me just say how much I appreciate it. It's a very simple, a very clean illustration, but yet it's really packed with a lot of information. And I just wanted to say I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad it's helpful. It's certainly helpful. I have it on my wall right in front of my phone to keep track of where all these units are.
Well, most people have family pictures, but I get it.
I have those too.
Okay,
Okay, if there are no other questions from the board, I would suggest that we move on to resolution. Look this up, excuse me. 15. Yes, resolution 15. Scott, if you would stay on the line just in case if the board wants to come back to any issues before they move forward, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Resolution 15 is a resolution declaring an emergency pursuant to RCW 54.04.070 and 39.04.280 and authorizing the general manager to take all steps reasonable and necessary for procurement of the Rocky Reach C7 operating rod, a spare, and related parts found damaged as necessary. So this is an emergency resolution, and as a result of new information that's come to light just recently, George Velasquez will be presenting.
George, are you on?
Oh, I'm sorry. Kirk, were you going to start on this one too?
Yeah, I was going to start, but I just wanted to verify if George was on.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, similar to the last one, just wanted to provide an overview as well for Rocky Reach. And on page 87 of your board meeting book, has a similar figure, Rocky Reach. And just starting again from left, working our way right, we had C1, 2, and 3 all down earlier this year, awaiting trunnion bushing replacement. And we have since returned C1 to service. It's the first unit restored with new trunnion bushings. So glad that unit is up and running and is running well. We still have C2 and C3 down. And moving over further to the right, we have C7 down as well. It was undergoing trunnion bushing replacement. As well, we also had another issue we were concerned about from last September, which is the reason we took it down in the first place and decided to go ahead and disassemble, and we would address the trunnion bushing at the same time. And you're going to hear a little bit more about that concern that we had in September. And then just moving further to the right, you'll recall the large unit long-term repairs, C8 and C9 are done. C9 was returned earlier this year, and we have deferred the long-term repairs on 10 and 11 so that we could focus on the work at hand on 1 through 7. Just to zero in on C7, again, this was taken out of service September 2019 due to turbine guide bearing vibration. Some of the troubleshooting that was done and determined we had an issue that was either associated with a seal or the operating rod, which is part of the assembly that is used to adjust the blade position on the turbine. So we did decide to disassemble it. That was the way we were going to find out what the root cause was. That disassembly began in February, and once we were able to get a set of head gates freed up, that's been the challenge at Rocky Reach, is just the number of head gates we had. And then disassembly is still underway. As of last Monday, we discovered that we did have an operating rod that had failed. And it brings us to the resolution with a recommendation to replace that rod as expeditiously as possible. And with that, I'll turn it over to George, and just real briefly, similar to Rock Island Powerhouse 1, we had 4 units expected to return to service this year. We've returned 2 of those already, and we do expect to return a 3rd. And that 4th unit is this one we're talking about, which likely will not be returned due to the lead time for this replacement part. So with that, George, take it from here.
Thank you, Kirk. So on Monday, May 4th, during the disassembly of C7, the turbine operating rod, it was discovered that the top nut threaded section of that operating rod was broken off. This condition contributed to earlier forced outage on C7 in 2019. Like Kirk just mentioned, that was the culprit, that was the issue. We're currently analyzing probable causes for this break, and some of the steps we're taking are, we're sending that section of rod and the nut to Lisson Metallurgical out of Oregon. They help analyze metallurgical properties, and they also help identify and tell us if there was a forging flaw or subsurface condition that we didn't see during the castings, or excuse me, during the forging and the machining. And it's also going to tell us if it was just a flat-out fatigue break. We're also studying QAQC records and documents from the last refurbishment in the mid-90s. We're studying design and analysis to ensure that that design is robust. We're completing material specification reviews as well. And we're also completing a finite element analysis on that design in that system. This is going to help identify possible weak points in that design, if any. So after the discovery of that operating rod break, there were two options that we were considering for most efficient procurement of a new shaft plus an additional spare and possible related parts. Those options are obviously normal bid process, or to seek approval to declare an emergency and most expeditiously move forward with the repairs. It is estimated that the required forging of the operating rod and final machining is going to take roughly six months. Following the normal bid process roughly adds an additional 2 months to that. Therefore, the preferred option is to seek approval to declare an emergency. Generation team has prioritized, like Kirk said, replacement of the trunnion bushings for C1 through C7. And currently, the program includes refurbishing two units at a time. We're doing two C2 and C7 currently. The next set will be C3 and C4. And then the final set will be C5 and C6. And we're doing that to compress and return the units back to service and compress the schedule, obviously. And due to the long-term repair program for C1 through C7, there are risks or additional risks, potential additional failures on the small units. Having additional unplanned units offline causes district revenue concerns, obviously, meeting load needs possibly, including spill and possibly increasing total dissolved gas production, all these things you're aware of, hydro availability for bulk power systems and other issues. So due to the long lead time in manufacturing turbine parts and assemblies, ordering a new C7 rod and a spare and related parts is recommended. Additionally, other parts for the remaining unit rehabilitation, C3, C4, C5, and C6, could be necessary if found damaged. We just don't know yet, just like we didn't know on C7. And then authorizing to procure under this resolution as necessary if requested. So the Rocky Reach Lake Chelan Engineering and Project Management team and Generation team are recommending that we procure C7 operating rod, a spare, and then other parts as required through this resolution declaring emergency. Do you have any questions for me at this time?
Commissioners, I want to jump in for just a second because when I read the resolution, Eric and I were looking at each other when we realized that there's an error here. Just on the mea culpa side of you can tell that this emergency resolution came forward relatively quickly. We discussed just last Wednesday that we really don't know, as George described, what the root cause is yet, which means that we're not sure how applicable this will be to other units. And it could be, as we go through this process, we're going to discover that we might want to have more than one spare. So we were the resolution itself has been modified to address that potential, but the title has not. So, Eric, would you just speak for a moment to the how we'd want to change the title?
Yeah, Commissioners, Eric, so Steve was kind. I made the changes, and I missed the title. So the intent was to give given the uncertainty on whether the rods would be necessary on additional units and the fact that we're going to be negotiating contracts to procure those things with long lead times in advance, we will have the opportunity in all likelihood through that negotiation, and we would do this and have done it on other matters as well, to secure pricing and lock in pricing, hopefully, for additional rods should they become necessary at the district's option. So the intent following the discussion of last week, given the uncertainty on what would be necessary, and that's also why the related parts you see in the resolution language is there as well, that the intent was actually to give ourselves the discretion to, or I guess the opportunity to negotiate pricing for additional rods should they become necessary as part of this. So in the body of the resolution, I had changed it so that we could procure more than one rod as a spare or for replacement in the event the spare that we were anticipating procuring became immediately necessary to replace another, then we would have another need for another spare, and you can see how that would potentially go on down the line. So the intent was to give ourselves the flexibility to negotiate for those potentially necessary products in advance as part of one conversation, one manufacturer with consistency. So the fact is I did not change the title. So where it reads a spare, the A should be stricken and spares should be plural. So with your permission, commissioners, we'll make that. It's a Scrivener's error change. We'll make that change and have it in the packet for board signature approval. Should the board vote in favor of the resolution, we'll make that change. I just want to make sure that the board doesn't have any questions about that.
Commissioners, any questions?
All right, commissioners, then with that, I apologize for the oversight, and we'll make that change in the event the board votes in favor of the resolution.
And any questions or comments about the general emergency nature of this and the resolution itself? Okay, if not, we are done with the resolution section then and ready for the board to act.
Commissioners, we have an agenda and resolutions in front of us. Do I hear any motions?
Mr. President, I move that we accept agenda items 12 and 15 as presented with the acknowledgement of a change in the title to Resolution 15.
Thank you, Commissioner Bolts. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of accepting Resolutions 12 and 15, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay, and the ayes have it.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, Steve, I think we're moving on to, we have time for manager items?
I think we do, and we've got two today. I want to ask Carrie Wendell to start. We had committed to providing you updates on COVID-19 activity, particularly with respect to what we're hearing from customers. Carrie's on the front lines for us, and she's ready, I believe. Carrie, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning, commissioners. This is Carrie Wendell, Customer Relations Manager. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the customer service options related to customers that are affected by COVID-19. The decision at that time was to continue with updates this month on what we're seeing with our customers. So one of the things I'd just like to note that we've taken a deeper dive into the data, and we are really not seeing the big impacts that were originally forecasted. So that's a good sign. So if we'll start on slide 2, we have the updated Chelan County unemployment trends. So as you can see from the slide, it's lower.
I might have goofed up. I don't have any slides.
So, Commissioner Smith, this may be just the issue of re-downloading your packet. Did you open it on Thursday?
Yeah, I did. Now, okay. This has happened to me last time, I think. So, I have to re-download.
You're clearly quite earnest in carrying out your duties and opening them early as they come.
Okay, I'll get there. Go ahead. Don't let me stop it. I'll listen.
Okay, so just regarding the unemployment slide, basically the first couple weeks, it's lower than the first couple weeks, but it is still pretty high. In the first few weeks, the majority of that was the hospitality, the restaurants, and some of the non-essential retail. But now, the majority now, they're looking at the state did not disclose the industry, so we're not really sure exactly where those claims are coming from. So, Andrew, Griselle, did you have anything to add to that?
I didn't. I can say that, you know, as you can see, that there was a slight drop, and then it's some of the employment claims have gone back up a little bit. We are seeing a shift in where the unemployment claims are coming from. Before, it was a lot of the hospitality and a lot of those sorts of types of businesses. We've actually seen some in the ambulatory care in the hospital, based off of information from, not doing any types of surgeries, any elective sort of surgeries, any elective sort of work. And, you know, a personal story, you know, a friend of mine, you know, his wife has been, you know, cut, her time has been cut 50%, for example. And so she's a nurse, and but she's not on the front line. She's not like a front line nurse. So there's some of that going on. But there's also a bunch that we don't know. They list them as undisclosed. We don't know. It'd be great to know where those industries are coming from, but, or where those claims are coming from. But we just don't know where that is coming from at this point. So there's a large number of those, I think over 700 or 800 of those that are considered undisclosed. So.
Thanks, Andrew. So moving on to slide three, from the slides 2 weeks ago, I've broken this data out to look at the customers that have self-reported being affected by COVID-19 and the customers that normally have a higher frequency of late payments. So that suggestion was made by several commissioners at the last meeting. So this data is this on this slide is just related to the customers that have contacted us. So you can, as you can see, we've only moved up about in the two from April 20th to May 6th. We moved up 217 customers have actually notified us, and from that. I've also, this data I've looked into is related to our internal PUD credit score. So each customer starts out with a credit rating of 850. And when they start receiving late notices or return payments or we disconnect the service, that lowers their credit score by each event. So I looked into that a little bit. And so just looking at these customers that have contacted us, the residential 180 customers, about 41% of these customers normally pay on time, so they're not typically late. And then 59% of these customers are typically late. So the residential customers, also 96 of the customers that have contacted us have never received a call from us. So normally when they are up for a disconnection, we normally would make a contact call to them to pay the next day. So that's a pretty, 96 is how many have never received that call. And then when you look at the businesses, the 37 businesses that have contacted us, 67% of those customers normally pay on time, and then 32% are typically late. So that number is low as well. So then we also go down to the energy assistance. There's been 72 customers since March that have received the energy assistance through Community Action. Does anyone have any questions on that slide? Okay, so
are the numbers on the Community Action request of 72, how is that compared to a typical request?
During these months, I would say that it's a little bit higher, but I can find out that information to see what that was compared to last year at this time.
I was curious if it was significant or not.
Well, a lot of the customers in the last 2 months, the qualifications have changed, so they only need to provide 1 month of their income. And if they have qualified before in the last, I think, 6 months, they would be eligible right away for a grant. So I would say we have recommended a lot of our customers go to Community Action, especially if they have been helped already in the last few months. So I would say that number probably is higher.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. So if we move to slide 4, I apologize for so many slides. I wanted to try to get this to be a little more clear from the last meeting. So on slide 4, this is the revenue in past due status. So you can see these numbers have jumped a little bit, but also this is the time of the year for residential and our commercial customers that are on a monthly budget. They're getting through the winter, and that this is normally the time that they carry a balance from their winter bills, and that shows up as revenue past due. So that's where you're going to see that jump, especially on the May 6th data, the normal May 6th, the $61,000 for residential up from $44,000, and now that's up to $115,000. And then also keep in mind that we haven't done our credit collection processes of disconnecting our customers after the 60 days. So that hasn't been done since March, so that's why that is also still high. And then on the commercial customers, just one thing to note, we do have one of our customers with a balance over $10,000 that we're working on. There was a third-party payment issue, so that's up about $10,000 more than it would normally be up. So kind of what you see with the differences in the past due status. Any questions with that slide? Okay, moving to slide 5. So this was the difference between the COVID customers and our past due, regular past due revenue in past due status. So I thought looking at the disconnect notices would help us a little bit, but it looks like from this, it really ended up to be close to the same. If you add those together, we really sent out pretty much the same amount this year as we have last year. So I'm not sure. We may see that number go up in May, but at this point, they're pretty similar. And again, from the past due customers, I've actually dug into that, looking at the PUD credit score as well. And from that, the residential, the 311 customers, really only 16% of those customers normally do pay on time and that are not typically late, and 84% of those are typically late. And then the businesses as well, 30% normally pay on time and 70% are typically late. So maybe just another thing to put in perspective, over the months of March, April, and May, we've had a total of 1,300 accounts that have been past due over 65 days. And right now, out of that 1,300, we only have 347 accounts that are still past due. And I have to give tons of credit to my group because we've collected payments on 964 accounts that have been past due. So they've, my team is, if I can give them kudos at this time, I have to do that because they're just doing awesome taking care of our customers at this time. Does anyone have any other questions on slide 5? Sorry, I could go on about my group a long time. I need to move on to slide 6. So slide 6 shows the information about the Helping Hand Funds. There were a lot of questions that came up at the last meeting. I was hoping that this slide answers the questions that you had. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them. We were able to help another 56 customers that were affected by COVID at the end of April, and probably have another small batch ready to go in the next couple weeks. So as you can see from my slides provided, the overall impact is definitely lower than we originally forecasted. And so we will, at this point, we'll just continue to contact and communicate with our customers that are past due and keep working to figure out these impacts. So if you guys have any questions or suggestions or need more information, I'm available to do that for you.
Thanks, Carrie. That's really good information. Appreciate all the work you took to pull it together.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I'd like to do two things real quick. First, this is in part of this information is in response to a request Commissioner Bowles made at the previous meeting about how many are one-time past due versus with multiple past due notices. So hopefully that has addressed your concern, Commissioner Bowles.
Hey, yes, it has. I appreciate the illustrations. And just doing, you know, if we have about 50,000 meters and what we have delinquent at this point is less than 1%. I think that's just absolutely remarkable for a difficult time that we're in.
Yeah, I will admit to personally being surprised at the relatively small number of increase in calls and the relatively small number of delinquent accounts at this point. Would have expected a lot more. Now, that could be just a function of the fact that there's a lot of federal money that's beginning to show up, and we may see these numbers increase as we move through time, and we'll plan to continue to track them and report to the board on a regular basis about it. Any further questions about that? Okay, commissioners, we're right at noon, and now we have a decision point. We have one more manager's item. We have the usual cleanup at the end of a meeting regarding action items, both from a previous meeting and this one, and commission travel. Possible that we could get through that in about 15 minutes, and at that point we would actually be done for the day. We don't have an executive session item, as I recall. Apparently we have one that I'm going to... Okay, last manager item, Mike Coleman.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Mike Coleman, Managing Director, Fiber and Telecom. Going to provide an update on the hotspots and also on the network bandwidth. We still have 8 hotspots, the same as last week. I was able to get some data, and those hotspots had 224 visitors over the past week. 143 of those were returning visitors, and 81 were new visitors. I was able to look at the traffic statistics by the hotspot, and it's hard to take in a lot of folks that are connecting just for a few minutes. There's other an hour or two and getting their work done. But overall, it was a nice increase from the previous week. The trend on the usage is going up, so I will anticipate probably some better numbers in the next 2 weeks. As far as the number of hotspots, I talked to Jenny Rickle at Native Networks last Friday, and they've had some of their resources out of town on other projects. They're back in town, so Native Networks is looking at 3 to 4 locations to add hotspots. And Dimitri at Localtel told me this morning that they have a couple more locations that they're looking at adding hotspots. So we should see those numbers go up also. As far as the network bandwidth, surprisingly, the network bandwidth came down a little bit this period. There's indications that that's true for other providers and across the industry. It's as if people were really, really burning a lot of bandwidth trying to understand COVID and get their hands around what were happening, and they appear to be returning a little bit to a normal pattern. It's still above the old normal, but everything is looking good within the network. All of the OLT link utilizations are well below the 90% parameter that we look for. There's been some variability in those, and we're still looking for why that variability is there, why one node would go up as opposed to another one. Overall, the network is performing very solid. There is adequate bandwidth between all of the nodes, and the core links are also measuring very good, and none are coming close to exceeding design capacity. So a good report on the network, and again, a positive report on the hotspots that are in action today. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions for Mike? Mike, I actually have a question, and had to do with one of the comments you made in terms of being able to monitor the usage of the hotspots. Is there any way that we would know if somebody's going there and streaming a movie versus if someone's going there and doing like schoolwork or something less demanding than, say, a movie?
There is not a way that we would know it, however the service providers would. And the hotspots that are out there today are set up to where streaming a movie would not be allowed. That really was not the purpose of them. It was to offer either the school children or individuals that needed them for, I'll say, business purposes, online applications and information and things like that. And so they were deliberately restricted to keep somebody from using a lot of bandwidth on entertainment type activities.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that.
Okay, if there are no other questions, we are done with manager items and ready to move on to commission items.
Okay, commissioners, do we have anything to share?
The only thing, Gary, this is Randy. We have strategic planning later this week. You on for that?
Yes. No, I'm on for that. And then don't we have something on the 15th as well?
Correct. Our annual meeting, I guess is what it's called. But yeah, the one that was postponed in April. So and those will all be via Zoom.
And Randy, so tell me, the one on the 15th, is that a all-day meeting? And that's just one day, right? That's just the 15th?
I believe we're scheduled for 3 hours.
Okay, I think you're right. I just wanted to confirm. Thank you.
Yep.
I have something to share with my fellow commissioners, and that is that, as you most probably all know, it's been 5.5 years or thereabouts since I was elected as a commissioner, and therefore I am at that moment in time where we need to file for re-election if that is the path forward. And I have effectively filed as of this morning and received my notice from the elections office. And, of course, that means that there are a few things that I will not be able to do going forward, one of which is be on the radio to represent the district until after the conclusion of the election. So I just want to beg all of your patience with me as we go forward, that I will not be able to carry that load, but I promise that as soon as the elections are over, I will once again carry my share of the load.
And this is Steve. I have filed as well.
And this is Dennis.
Hey,
this is Ann. Glad both of you have done that.
Yes, Ann. Here,
this is Dan.
Yes.
I'm happy to step up and carry more of the load. Just whatever you need for the radio interviews.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you.
And Gary, this is Dennis as well.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Make that three for three.
Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Well, if there are no other commissioner items for discussion, then I think we can probably move on to travel.
And Lisa Sanders is here and ready to speak to that.
Hello, commissioners. For the April 15th Waputa, do we need to register you for those that day?
I believe that we registered by email, just letting them know we're going to be on the call.
Okay.
Got the call, so I don't think there's a registration form.
Okay. So it looks like...
Lisa, if I can jump in, one thing, so we get it on the... just so we get it on our scorecard for the commissioners, and that is what Commissioner Smith mentioned earlier, is that there is a strategic planning Zoom meeting that will be taking place this Wednesday, and that should be applied to the commissioner scorecard.
Okay, thank you.
And Lisa, this is Ann. Before you move on,
yes.
So Randy, what is the meeting on Wednesday? Is the Waputa annual meeting? Can you?
No, this Wednesday is
bringing up to date.
Or is it this? I've got to pull my calendar up. I have to close the meeting to get to the calendar.
You want to call me later?
Yeah. Unless it needs to be out here. We have a meeting this. What I'm looking at is this Friday and next Friday.
Maybe just text me if you would. What?
You bet. I'll coordinate through Lisa on this. But Lisa, one of the things that I wanted to maybe sort of shorten your questions on things, it appears in the July Waputa meetings, where it hasn't been voted on yet, but it's being recommended that we cancel them.
Okay.
It hasn't been finally decided yet, but it appears that the July policymakers meeting in Washington, D.C. will ultimately be held. We'll have virtual meetings with our representatives and their aides. That is the hope at this point, and so that meeting will not occur.
Okay.
And that's as far as my knowledge stretches for the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Randy, this is Dennis.
Yeah.
Could you copy me in when you contact Ann regarding the strategic meeting and the annual meeting, those dates and times, because I'm not clear on my calendar on either one of those.
Okay, I will probably coordinate, just have Rebecca send it out once I get the clarity myself. I'll look back at my emails and that. So, and have Rebecca send it to everybody.
all of the insurance. Thank you.
Yeah.
For Steve as well. Thank you.
Yeah, for all five. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? I'll move along. Looks like Energy Northwest on April 22nd was postponed. Waputa, May 13, 14, I have canceled. NWPPA in May, I haven't heard anything about. I've canceled hotel rooms for APPA in June. I want to make sure you all cancel your flights.
Lisa?
Yes?
Just real quick, did you say that the NWPPA May 17th meeting you have not heard about?
I have not.
It has been canceled.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, will you repeat that? NWPPA has been canceled for sure?
This is Gary, and I received an email saying that they canceled it. I think it's going to be virtual.
That's what I think. I think it's going to be virtual. It's not going to be in person, but we will have a virtual meeting.
Right, just the hotels and such, the travel has been, right. That part of it has been canceled.
Right, okay, thanks.
So for June 7, APPA, I had... we need to confirm registrations. I had Commissioner Congdon and Commissioner Arsenault weren't sure if they wanted to be registered. They were going to look at the agenda, I think. Have you been able to do that?
This is for the virtual APPA conference.
Yeah.
Lisa, let me talk to you offline. I haven't yet made up my mind conclusively on that.
Okay. So I have Commissioners Smith and McKenna. They're registered for the virtual event. Commissioner Bowles is not. So I'm waiting to find out if Commissioners Congdon and Arsenault need any changes.
Lisa, you're referring to APPA annual meeting?
Yes.
So I probably will attend at least some of that virtually.
Okay, I can register you.
What's the cost? Well, why don't we talk offline?
Okay.
About that. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I haven't heard what the virtual cost is. I just know if you were already registered, they would automatically refund us the difference. So that will happen for Commissioner Smith and McKenna and Commissioner Arsenault if you decide to participate. And Commissioner Congdon, I'll have to look that up. And only travel-related I have scheduled is June 25th, a hotel room for Commissioner Congdon for the Waputa Water Committee meeting.
So you said hotel for that?
Yes, in Olympia.
In June?
Yes.
I'm sure that's canceled. Go ahead and cancel the hotel.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Other than that, I don't have anything booked until October.
I think that's probably about right. Lisa, my guess is that as we get into June, maybe a week or two into June, we'll have more clarity on meetings that might occur in person.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, I'll follow up offline with Commissioners Arsenault and Congdon for the APPA virtual meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Steve, I think that's it for commission travel. We'll follow up on delegation of action items.
We had quite a few from last meeting, so Rebecca was going to make sure we got an agenda item, the board workshop regarding COVID-19 impacts on district performance plan. She's got that done. Carrie was going to provide information about the past due accounts. She did that today. Mike would provide information on additional community Wi-Fi access points. He did that today. And Rebecca has been following up not just with Commissioner Arsenault, but all of the commissioners on signature pilot project. This is the getting signatures electronically. And are we completed with that now? Got four, so we've got one more to do. So we're getting really close on that. And the there was a request to take a look at one of the schools had requested work tables near community Wi-Fi access points. And I know that Mike Coleman has looked into that, talked with Commissioner McKenna. We generally think that that is candidly not a good idea. And so I think that's been communicated to Commissioner McKenna. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the final issue that I'm not sure about is that I know there was a Catherine Willard was going to try to follow up with Commissioner Congdon about the Skaha Hatchery information. So I think she's Catherine is willing to do that, Commissioner Congdon.
Oh, so to meet in person?
Or I was thinking actually by phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll contact her. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, letting me know. Thanks.
Great. And I think that's it for our action items from last week.
Okay, great. Thank you. Delegation of action items for today?
We just have one, I think, and that's that Rebecca will send commissioners calendar invites for the Waputo Strategic Plan and annual meetings after coordinating with Commissioner Smith. Did we miss anything?
I think that sounds like it. Okay. Well, then, at this moment, what I would like to do is encourage any member of the public that might be on the phone that would wish to say or make a comment. This is your opportunity. Rebecca, if you would open the phone lines. Reminder that if you wish to make a comment, please state your name, your address for the record, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Carry no member of the public. Are there any matters or general business as may be necessary to come before the commission? Hearing none, we do have a need for a short executive session. Discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement action litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risks as associated by the or authorized by the RCW. About 10 minutes, would that be correct?
That seems right to Eric and I. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Commissioners, does everyone have the appropriate phone number to call back in on for the executive session?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Then we will terminate. We will terminate this call, and we will come back after the executive session to close the meeting. Thank you, everyone. We're coming out of executive session. It is May 11th, 2020. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. And at this time, is there any additional business to come before the commission?
Commissioners, I would like to add one item, a manager's item. This is just an update on our activities regarding COVID-19. A couple of things. You know that we have been seeking to support the Chelan Douglas Health Board and their activities. One of the key ways that we had actually spent a fair amount of time, I want to thank Eric and Lorna Klemanski for their efforts on this, was to create an interlocal agreement between us and CDHD that would allow our employees to perform contact tracing. As of 2 weeks ago, CDHD felt that they needed a very large increase in contact tracers to be able to keep track of and keep up with the likely increase as a result of more tests become available. And so we prepared to support that. Late last week, we got word from them that the state has committed to In fact, believes that already has trained 600 contact tracers and is headed towards 1,500, and that they believe that they can provide that service from any place in the state, including Seattle, and that they would be able to do it for up to 18 months for the length of time until potentially a vaccine would be available. Well, that was a game changer and definitely reduced the need for our support for that. And so at least at the moment, that effort is on hold. We're going to keep the files in case it's needed, but it appears that they've got the support that they need in order to pull that off. They wanted to make sure that they knew that they were not being ungrateful in not accepting our offer, our generous offer, and they had put a lot of time into it as well. But they've just got a better alternative at the moment, and actually it's better for us too to have that. So we're all happy with the way that's turned out. Would also mention very quickly that we continue to provide some background support to a proposal to offer a waiver request to the state. We're not trying to influence the decision as to what businesses would be impacted. We're just trying to provide some support in terms of how would reading through the documents about how a waiver would be proposed and providing some information that we've gleaned from the county about the different types of activities that are going on in the county that could help support a waiver request. And we basically have turned that over to CDHD. It's up to them as to how they would choose to use that. And so we continue to look for ways that we can support their activities and helpful wherever we can be without seeking to control the activity. That's it.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Any other additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we shall stand adjourned.